A TV news crew gunned down as they're live on the air. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show's always live at 9, and make sure to subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, we'll take your calls on the tragedy of those shooting deaths in Virginia. You can get on the line now with your thoughts and comments at 549-2937. Then later, Trauma One in Jacksonville marks 30 years of saving lives in flight. We'll tell you about it, plus a look at all this weekend's events with The Spectator. All of that ahead. But first this hour, new details are emerging this morning about the shooting deaths of a local news crew in Virginia, just as they were in the middle of their live shot. On Wednesday, a former employee of Roanoke Station WDBJ named Vester Lee Flanagan, shot dead 24-year-old reporter Allison Parker and 27-year-old cameraman Adam Ward while Parker was live on the air. Flanagan, a former TV reporter himself who went by the pseudonym Bryce Williams, also injured Vicki Gardner. She was head of a local chamber of commerce who Parker was interviewing. As Flanagan gunned them down with 6 or 7 shots, viewers saw the whole thing live, as did colleagues in the WDBJ control room. Flanagan, a.k.a. Williams, recorded video of his killing, which he then spread on social media as he fled the scene. During his flight from authorities, posts to Twitter appeared in the name of Bryce Williams, showing video recorded from the perspective of his gun barrel as his shot struck the victims. Social media users were horrified by these scenes playing out before them on autoplay. Now, by the time police caught up with him, Williams had shot himself, and he later died at a local hospital. We begin the hour now with a discussion about this tragedy as we welcome an executive from the broadcasting industry to the program, Bob Ellis, general manager at WJXT Channel 4, the local station. Our news partner is on the line. Bob, a pleasure. Sorry we're having you join us on this sad occasion, but good morning to you.
Good morning, Melissa.
And also joining us here in studio, our own music director and former television news photographer, David Luckin, to share his thoughts.
Good morning.
And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts and reactions to the tragedy that happened at the Roanoke television station, WDBJ? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect and email and tweet the show. Bob, heavy hearts across the nation today. Everybody is saddened by this, but in particular, people who work in the broadcasting industry, including your colleagues at Channel 4.
Yeah, you know, Melissa, yesterday was a tough day for I think, everybody in the broadcast industry, certainly in television. This, you know, workplace violence, unfortunately, is something that is, you know, is an occurrence, you know, on a too often regular basis in our society. But when it hits your business like it did hours here at Channel 4 yesterday, I think that there was some folks here for sure that were touched maybe a little more deeply, you know, than others. And so, yeah, it was a tough day here yesterday for sure.
Sure. And as you said, it's a story involving television news, but the broader issue is that of workplace violence. In your career in television, I believe you yourself had experienced incidents like this. Is that right?
Yeah, I have the unfortunate... I had the unfortunate experience of being in a senior leadership position in a newsroom in Detroit when a viewer who was mentally ill and known by the station to be so came to the station and came to our television station and tried to gain entry in the front door and you know our station at the time had an airlock, you know, where you go through the first set of doors into a sort of an airlock, then through a second set of doors to enter a building, much like you would at a department store or something. And he got into that first airlock, and thankfully the security person at our front door recognized who it was and what happened. But unfortunately, a guest of the station also, a few minutes later, entered that airlock, and this person... pulled a gun and shot and wounded, did not kill, but wounded the individual that was visiting the station. And so, you know, when that happens in the lobby of your building, you know, it causes quite a, you know, quite a reaction, as you would imagine. And I was actually walking towards the front doors of the station, coincidentally, when it occurred. So I'm unfortunately, I've had some experience with what goes on and the feelings and those initial moments of fear and panic and uncertainty that I'm sure everyone in that building felt yesterday, and anyone who's been involved in any kind of workplace violence.
We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. David Luckin, it is a sad reality of the broadcasting business that stations can and employees can be targets. At the same time, though, as Bob pointed out, the issue of workplace violence isn't particular to the television industry. Lots of businesses and workplaces have been touched by these problems.
Well, and it's been called going postal for years because it was often postal workers. But this could happen anywhere. Bob's absolutely right. But as a news photographer, we are trained and we know to beware of our surroundings. And I have to say, you're a team and you watch for your reporter and your reporter watches for you. But it's 6:45 in the morning at a Chamber of Commerce story. That's not exactly the place I would have been even thinking about that. It wasn't a protest. It wasn't a violent neighborhood. And that's just awful. I mean, you just you can't prepare for that. And if someone that deranged wants to do that, they're going to do it.
And doubling the horror, the fact that it had occurred on live television.
And that he waited for the photographer to pan over to the reporter. That was just, that's the worst part to me. He was so pinpoint focused on getting the deed done and making sure everyone saw it. It's so disturbing.
And you know, Bob, we're learning more about the alleged shooter, Vester Lee Flanagan, a former disgruntled employee who appeared to be mentally unstable, judging by what has been reported so far. This issue that so many companies have when someone leaves a company on bad terms and perhaps is holding a grudge, it's tragic, it's a difficult issue for organizations to deal with under any circumstances.
Oh, there's no doubt. You know, it's interesting, we have an employee here at the television station who worked at that station and knew all three of the folks involved, the two folks who unfortunately were killed yesterday, but also the shooter. And you're right, it's a very tough thing to deal with when you have an employee that you know is disgruntled or upset, and I think as a manager, no matter if it's me here at the television station or any business in Jacksonville hearing this interview, you know, we all have to be aware and conscious, and you know, I guess from my standpoint, what it's a reminder of, and we certainly try to do this every day, but it's a reminder of the handling of situations in the workplace. When you're handling a situation, you're certainly handling a particular employee, but you're really handling the security and safety of everybody who works for you. And I think that's something we, you know, if there's anything to take from this that can be of benefit, it's for folks to remember that.
And a few more bits of information about this story. Allison Parker and Adam Ward are the first journalists killed in the U.S. in the line of duty since 2007. According to police, the shooter Flanagan had purchased a couple of Glocks, 9mm pistols that he bought legally. 549-2937. Let's take a few of your calls right now. Steve on the South Side. Hey, Steve, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Not that good. I'm looking at the front page of the Florida Times Union. And, of course, the top header is Daily Attack on Live TV. And the bottom three-inch crawler is the Jacksonville Gun Show. Come on down. Concealed weapons. Class is only $39. I mean, is this sick irony lost on everybody else? We've had 6- and 7-year-old kids gunned down, churchgoers, now reporters. I mean, we might as well just get used to it. You have a whole program on this, and come on down, get your guns. I don't know if that's exactly on point, but comments from anybody?
Steve, thanks. You know, I believe it's actually not the first time the TU has had something like that happen, where they have a story on the front page and there's a gun show sticker affixed to the front of the paper. I think that's indicative of a larger issue or discussion we can have about guns in this country rather than pinning blame on the Florida Times Union because media outlets are reflective of their societies. David.
Well, and when those stickers are affixed or the advertisement is not coordinated with the news department, so that space has been bought, it is unfortunate and it seems like a horrible irony, but that does happen. I think what the reporter's father was just saying on CNN was, for him, it's a case of procurement of guns by people that shouldn't have guns.
Yeah, Bob Ellis, of course, every time one of these tragedies occurs, there's a cycle of stories in local and national media about the politics around gun control, how we deal with issues of mental illness in this country. How many times now have we seen this cycle occur?
Yeah, too many, Melissa, unfortunately, but you're right. It is a cycle of stories. And, you know, it's a conversation that I think news outlets should be bringing to the to the forefront. It's not our job to decide what's right and what's wrong. It's our job to present the sides of the story and the feelings of people, on both sides of the issue, and then make an informed decision. But I think the subject of mental health in particular is one that we have talked about and done stories and things here at the television station, because that is as big an issue, in a lot of pockets, and unfortunately, these two subjects too often become intertwined.
Hey, Bob, a question for you: how do you control an ad for a gun shop appearing during your news coverage? Is this, to the gentleman's point, are you coordinated or address what he was saying?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, we do look at that. Quite honestly, we definitely. Have folks in the television station that are tuned in and aware of what the news is on a daily basis, and work to make sure that those things don't happen to the best of our abilities. I certainly don't want to call us perfect, because we're not, but it is something we definitely think about, discuss, and try to act upon whenever is possible. It's a conversation that definitely occurs here.
A couple of other points to make about this young crew out in the field. The reporter, Allison Parker, was either living with or engaged to another colleague at the station. The photographer also was dating someone at the station.
His fiance was in the booth watching it.
Yeah, and that adds to the tragedy of this, and lots of people on hold waiting to express their thoughts. Let's go now to John in St. Augustine. Hi, John.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you today?
Doing all right, thanks.
Seeing the story yesterday, it reminded me of back in the mid-90s in Lee County, the superintendent was shot. And it was by a former teacher who had resigned. We just don't know what forced the teacher to resign. But the teacher just walked into the superintendent's office and shot him. And the superintendent at that time was beloved by the entire county, and he was nationally recognized. So it was not like it was going in a bad direction. It's just this teacher had lost his job for whatever reason and took it out on the superintendent.
Wow, yeah. Sorry, John. Thanks for sharing that. At our own, was it Episcopal High School?
It was. The
principal was shot a year or two ago. And let's go now to Mark on the West Side. Hi, Mark. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Good morning. You know, it'll be very interesting to find out how this guy knew where these reporters were when they were filming a story exactly at that moment. That'll be kind of interesting to find out as all this shakes out. But, you know, I feel a little trepidation even discussing this, because, we all know about copycat crimes. And, this person, whether intentionally or not, well, I'm sure intentionally, is getting the widest possible airplay for what he did, which I'm sure wants to do. And now you're going to hear all these people, or you're going to have these copycat crimes thinking, I'm going to do that too. I'm going to go and I'm going to get on every TV in the country and have my message put out there. I mean, this particular case, like no other. I mean, even when Ted Kaczynski was doing his stuff, his manifesto wasn't readily available everywhere, but this is on every TV station everywhere in the country. And, you're going to have these sick, deranged individuals hear this. And I mean, I don't know a way around it. I mean, we have to discuss this and talk about this, but it really, in the back of my mind, I'm going, what's next?
Yeah, that's Mark on the West Side. Thanks, Mark. We're getting a tweet about this from Brenda, who writes, the broader issue is also the media featuring these images of perpetrators and their manifestos. Bob Ellis, at your media outlet, WJXT, you've made a point of honoring and trying to remember the victims of this shooting, Allison Parker and Adam Ward.
Yeah, you know, these are tough stories. I think, you know, both of the listeners' comments are worth discussing. You know, we definitely had some conversations here yesterday about the need to be aware and vigilant when our folks are in the field, because you just don't know what's going to happen. Certainly, you know, Jacksonville is a primarily safe place, and we've never had anything like this occur here, and we certainly hope and believe we won't. But you do have to have these conversations, and we did yesterday here at the television station. I think, you know, we wouldn't have been doing our jobs if we didn't. On the subject of the victims, I think you're right. You know, it's, you know, when you work in the television news business, and Melissa, you did for many years, you know this, particularly in smaller markets, and this is a television station that's located in a smaller market, you have a lot of young people, and you have people who are away from their families and people who are a long way from home. And they very much bond, and they become, you know, the family that you're not around, you know. And I think that in those situations when this occurs, it's deeply affected that television station for those reasons, because these are young people beginning the beginnings of their careers, and their friends and their family, you know, become one and the same in these situations. And so that's really something we thought a lot about yesterday in our news coverage, and wanted to, make sure that the people that were killed, and the reporter and photographer, as I said, we have someone here who knew both of them, but we wanted to make sure that the victims was the focus of our coverage, and,
sure.
And hopefully we did that.
Yeah, Bob, gosh, it's so chilling that you say that, because David and I were actually just sitting here before we went on the air saying the exact same thing to each other. I think one of the reasons David and I are so close is because we're part of that little fraternity of people that spent our youth on those stories in small markets.
And eight hours a day in a car
with the person that you're doing the piece with. And they in smaller markets, young people are all working crazy shifts, and they are far from where they grew up usually. And you do become a family. You do.
Well, and you also, The stories that we cover in a newsroom, no matter the size of the market, and I think you'd agree with this, you know, they affect us. Our people are affected by the news we cover. I think sometimes, you know, the public doesn't maybe realize that as much. And I mean, these stories sometimes are tough for our folks to report. I'm not even speaking of yesterday, which was maybe tougher than many. I'm talking about on a daily basis. I mean, these are difficult things. And so you become, you know, when the person you're sitting next to, as you said, for 8 hours a day in a live truck or whatever it is, they become your, you know, you end up spending, in even in large markets, you spend as much or more time with them than you even do your family. And so when this kind of thing occurs, it cuts deep.
Here's a tweet from Don Lopez at Action News, tweeting the show, "We all feel it in the industry. There's nothing they could have done. We try to have each other's back, but this happens anyway. It's sick." Let's go now to Angie in Ponte Vedra. Hi, Angie. How are you? Good morning.
Hi, I'm good, Melissa. Thanks for taking my call. I do want to level set. I'm a law-abiding gun owner, but I have a provocative question for you. And the biggest lobbying entity in our country is the NRA. Do you, or do your panelists, do they feel that that's a lobbying arm that's representing our country in a demographic way? I mean, I just want to go with that a little bit, because these guys are really controlling a lot of what happens in legislation. And I'll leave it at that.
Angie, thanks for the call.
Well, it's the NRA is fighting the mental illness clause for keeping guns from people. I mean, every time it comes up, we need stricter investigation before we hand out a gun to someone. They're on the other side of that. So it's we don't want to paint gun owners as bad people. I'm with the caller. But the NRA seems to, in my opinion, they're always on the other side. No matter how heinous the crime, they want no restrictions because they consider it a slippery slope.
Yeah. And Bob Ellis, as you pointed out a minute ago, it's not your job as a broadcast executive to give your opinion on this. But it's certainly that aspect of this tragedy, along with how we as a nation are failing to help reach out to those who are mentally unstable. These are major public health issues for this country.
Yeah, I think, you know, as you said, it's not, you know, my opinion on this is I'm not qualified to give an opinion or you know, on that subject, other than to tell you that I think that it's our job and we need to be bringing to, you know, to the top of people's minds the issues surrounding situations like this one. And we try to do that on a daily basis. Hopefully we're not reporting these kinds of stories on a daily basis, but I think starting that, our job is to start that conversation. Our job is to present the sides of it and to let people then, you know, make the decisions or become passionate on one side of the issue and do what they think is right. I do think our job as a television station is to talk about these things and start a conversation.
John tweets the show as we continue our conversation. He says, the challenge of workplace violence is that security precautions are most likely reactive because we just can't predict hazards. Philip in St. John's. Hi, Philip. Thanks for calling. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Good morning.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, just one thing. I really can't comment on the whole gun issue in this particular case. I don't think we know nearly enough about anything in this case, other than the shooter may have had some mental issues based on the manifesto that was published. We don't know that anything was ever brought up to anybody, and we really don't know anything about this case so far. As far as the ability for the government to have stopped him from getting a gun, I mean, if something's not reported, then you know, the government doesn't know all, see all. But I will say I was very, very surprised that media was willing to put his manifesto out there so quickly in all of it, especially the parts where the young lady was being defamed. I mean, he called her basically a racist, and it went through national media. And I can guarantee in 3-4 weeks when there's a little disclaimer at the bottom that says, oh, yeah, nothing was ever found. We never talked to anybody that said she was. No one's going to care at that point because this story is going to be, you know, low in the news cycle. And I was really surprised about how easily she, you know, nationally was defamed. But on a broader issue of mental illness, since we've had some people recently that have had mental guns, you know, I think that's the broader issue. Yes, mental people shouldn't have guns, and if the NRA is taking that stance, then, you know, they're wrong. But the broader issue with mental illness is in this country, starting in like the 60s and 70s, we did away with a lot of our mental institutions, and we went to community control. And when you do community control, you know, this is the kind of thing that could happen. And we put a lot more money into the prison systems than we do in taking care of mental illness. And, you know, Florida State Prison we have, but there aren't a whole lot of places like Florida State Prison. And unless you commit a murder like this, you're not going to end up over there. So anyway, that's what I have to say.
Yeah.
I can't really comment on the shooting as much because we don't have the facts yet.
All right. Thanks. That's Philip down in St. John's.
Whoa. I'm at a loss for words here. This gentleman was obviously had mental problems. He was fired from his job because he couldn't work with others. But how do you report that? How does he get into the system as someone who should be kept from getting a gun? That's really hard to do. I mean, Bob knows that well. If you have an employee who causes trouble every day and you have to let him go, you may not know all of his mental condition, and you mm-hmm. can't forecast this. You can't predict it.
What we can talk about quickly, though, before we wrap this up, Bob, is that here in this community, JCCI, a think tank located in this building, has been conducting a mental health inquiry for some time now, and mental health professionals around the area are holding a summit in Jacksonville about how we as a society can do a better job with this problem. And so that's a conversation that's ongoing.
And it should be. You know, I think, you know, what is to be done about this subject, you know, again, I'm not qualified to talk about, but I would say that continuing to address it, discuss it, and make sure that there's outcomes. You know, it's a discussion is great, but it's really what the actions are after that discussion. And I think that, you know, if anything, that's the piece for me that I want to look at is to say, as these discussions are happening locally, which they are, they should, and that's wonderful, and I applaud JCCI and others for having that conversation, because I think it's important. It's important in any local community, frankly, but it's to enact, it's to do things, and I hope that that's what comes of this, because whenever this is brought to our attention, as it was yesterday with these poor two reporters and this reporter and photographer, if it pushes us, you know, across the country and in our local communities to move a little farther down the field to try to address the problem in a more meaningful way, if that's possible, I think that's great.
Well, we thank you both so much for joining us this morning to discuss this tough subject. Thank you both, guys,
thank you very much.
Appreciate you having me on. I know that for all of us, you know, the two of you included, this yesterday was a tough day for all of us, and appreciate your taking some time to talk about it and let us sort of discuss it together, because I think, you know, that helps everyone.
We needed it.
Absolutely. Joining us just now were Bob Ellis, the general manager at our news partner WJXT-TV Channel 4, the local station, and our own music director, former news photographer all over the country, David Luckin, joining us both just now. And much more still ahead later, The Spectator with some ideas for your weekend. But up next, 30 years of saving lives in flight, a milestone for this area's Trauma One Center. We'll tell you about it right after this.
The author Paul Kingsnorth never thought his book The Wake would get much attention. After all, it's written in a mostly made-up language. Then the first review came out,
which said it was a literary triumph, which I thought, blimey, no one's ever said that about my writing before.
We visit the author in Ireland later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First is proud to present the 4th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire teachers. Saturday, September 12th at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Tickets are only $30. Spend the day sharing ideas with colleagues, learning new ways to engage students, and empowering yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
Welcome back. Well, tomorrow it's a special anniversary at UF Health Jacksonville as some incredible life-saving professionals receive recognition they are so due. For 30 years now, Trauma One has been dispatching what are known as flying intensive care units all over this area. It's the only Level 1 trauma center in the region, absolutely critical for this community. Here to tell us all about the center and the anniversary, we welcome Dr. Jay Bracken Burns, Medical Director of Trauma One Flight Services. Good morning.
Good morning.
And also here, Chad McIntyre. He's the manager of Trauma One Flight Services. Good to see you, too.
Good morning, Melissa.
So, big doings at UF Health Friday morning. Let's begin with you, Dr. Burns. What's going to be happening?
Tomorrow, we're having an event to recognize our 30th anniversary. Big tent in front of the hospital and some public figures coming forward and just a celebration. So fun things and some some entertainment, that sort of thing. So just an opportunity to enjoy things for once.
Yeah, very nice to see that because, you know, Chad, as we were just talking about a minute ago, the tragedy of gun violence mm-hmm. and workplace violence in this country, the sad reality is in this area, if somebody gets shot or critically injured, trauma one is more often than not the place they're taken.
Right. So we are the only adult and pediatric level one trauma center in Northeast Florida. The helicopter, the thought behind bringing the helicopter to Northeast Florida back in 1985 was to bring the critical care to the patient where the incident happens rather than waiting for them to get to the facility. We're actually bringing the lifesavers with advanced care and advanced practice model all the way out to them at about 140 miles per hour.
Right. The difficulty of the job that you and your team does, it can't be overstated. This is a tough job with a really special skill set and a really special spirit.
It is. And, you know, we celebrate the fact that our crew is a very, very highly skilled group of paramedics and nurses. Dr. Burns will tell you, as our medical director, he has the medical oversight of our crew, and our crew performs at 100% every day, and there's very few jobs that would require somebody to be at the top of their game all the time, but we, with Dr. Burns, expect nothing but perfection, and they deliver every time.
That's really just a well-deserved compliment because all health professionals and physicians and medics deserve kudos and support. But in particular, I think the Trauma One team should be singled out. It's the only level one trauma center in the region, and there are actually only seven in the state of Florida. They're not very common. And you intake patients from a pretty wide area, don't you?
Yeah, our coverage area extends into Georgia and between here and Gainesville, we also take patients to Gainesville if they're closer to that area, and then south towards Daytona. So it's actually a very large coverage area that we cover and have been for a number of years.
It's important, too, to talk about how incredibly fast you guys work. Time is always the most important factor when it comes to a trauma flight, correct?
Yes. Yeah, so we have a few things that Dr. Burns and I have always wanted our flight crew to understand, that the first and foremost job is to provide safe transport. Secondarily is to do it with high quality care. And third is to do it very, very quickly. So we monitor how long it takes for them to get off the pad, and we look at how fast they're off the scene. We average about a 7.5 minute scene time. So skids down, assess the patient, start your IVs, get your medicines pushed, get your airway, and get skids up in about 7.5-8 minutes.
Man, you know, in the recent flap and fight over Medicaid funding in Florida, your CEO, Russ Armistead, Dr. Burns, went to Tallahassee and implored legislators to understand how important it is that a safety net hospital like UF Health receive level funding. Because if Trauma One were to be closed in this region, I don't think people can even comprehend what that would mean, the catastrophe that could mean for this area in terms of health and treating injured patients.
Absolutely. You know, extending beyond just the flight services concept for a minute, you know, the trauma center is the only one that deals with adult and pediatric patients for a large coverage area. And it takes a highly specialized group of individuals. It's not just physicians, it's nurses, it's medics, it's respiratory therapists, it's physical therapists. It's a multitude of people that work in a system that's designed to help trauma patients. And that's not existent at other facilities in this region. And so it's a critical asset.
Let's take a call about the 30th anniversary of Trauma One in Jacksonville. Mark is downtown. Hi, Mark. Thanks for calling.
I'm so glad you have these people on board. I've been wanting to ask this question for years. When I went into my second career from being an air traffic controller to being a nurse, I wanted to be, or I thought I wanted to be, a trauma nurse. And I looked into it, and it was about 10 years ago. And at that time, I was just astounded at the number of fatalities that these guys were going through. I mean, it was almost the number one fatality rate of all pilots and crew in the country. And at the time, they were doing some, the FAA was doing some, and the NTSB was doing a lot of research into this. And, you know, they're flying into very unsafe conditions at night and bad weather a lot of times. And there was no you know, separate training plan for helicopter pilots who did this kind of thing at that time. And I mean, it was so bad, it dissuaded me from going that route. And I was just kind of curious if over the years they corrected that, or they have to train in any different way, or you know, more hours, or you know.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. That's a great question. Mark in downtown Jacksonville.
Right. So, Mark, you brought up a good point. You know, and I will say that we have seen over the years an increase in incidents regarding the medical helicopters. And the points that you raised were very valid. We land in very austere conditions. We're coming in at a very high rate of speed, landing on I-95 and getting out of there. We're in the middle of a field. So one of the things that the FAA has done, and our partner MedTrans Corporation, who provides our helicopter, we have really instituted greater safety profiles. So we increase the weather minimums so that we, under visual flight rules, can see further and see better. We have a 3-to-1 to go and 1 to stay. So Dr. Burns and I review that, and Dr. Burns is the chair of the safety committee, so having the physician that wants to know what's going on. So if one person doesn't feel comfortable, then there's no question, we just don't go. So I will say that in 2008, 2009, you're absolutely right, our fatality rate was very, very high. Those have come down, and I think that while we do work in a dangerous situation, our rates are getting better, and hopefully we'll get that down to zero.
Mark in St. Augustine. Hi, Mark. Thanks for calling the show. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you. Number one, I want to thank everybody for their service that they're doing. I think it's a wonderful service that you provide. But I am kind of curious. I seem to recall a study that came out several years ago regarding the cost associated with the service that you provide. And now that you're there, I guess in short, my question is, do you ever find instances where you're called to a site, to an accident, and in retrospect, you look back and think they really didn't need our services at that particular instance? And therefore, it kind of adds to the overall cost of healthcare, so to speak. Maybe that's not a good question, but I was just curious about that.
Yeah, thanks for that, Mark.
It's actually a very valid question, and that's some of the things that we work on legislatively and with partnerships with the insurance companies. And one of the things that we really try to stress to the users of our service is that if you have a life-threatening emergency, if you're having a stroke, if you're having a heart attack, if you're a pediatric patient or a trauma patient, and you need to get to definitive care, going by helicopter is actually cost savings. And there's multiple studies that show that if you can actually keep the patient from you know, if it's a stroke patient, that they actually can return to a good, stable lifestyle. If it's a trauma patient and they spend a day and a half or two less in the ICU, then the helicopter was actually worth the transport because we can get you to a definitive level of care. Now, with that said, costs have increased with helicopter transports, and there's no doubt about that, because of the increased FAA regulations and the increase in keeping those flying machines ready to go and the crew well-trained. These are things that we are looking at across the industry. You know, healthcare costs were rising without a doubt all the way across the board. And our goal is to save the life of the patient and to be used appropriately, just like a trauma center, just like an emergency department. We want to make sure that the appropriate use, and when we are used appropriately, we don't see those costs go up, but inappropriate use, just like any other, would be expensive.
Thanks so much for all of the calls about the heroes of Trauma One. UF Health will celebrate their service, 30 years of Trauma One, this Friday at 9 a.m. at a special ceremony. We're so glad to welcome both of you to discuss the life-saving work you do. Thanks, gentlemen, for being here.
Thank you very much. Have a great morning.
Absolutely.
We were
joined by
Dr. Jay Bracken Burns, medical director, and Chad McIntyre, manager of Trauma One here in Jacksonville, the only level one trauma center for miles around. And we're back in a moment.
Spend some time in the Square, an online venue for local artists. WJCT, the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville, and Grassroots Natural Market invite you to vote for your favorite submission. Vote now through the end of the month. To learn more about the square and to place your vote, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
When it comes to wildfires out on the West Coast, it is not a matter of if, but rather when.
I don't worry about El Nino coming. I don't worry about an earthquake. But fire is the devastating event that will happen out here.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Imminent fires. How do you get ready? Story next time on Marketplace from APN.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Listeners love Relax Radio.
My name is Harry Reagan. I got hooked immediately because it's just the kind of radio station I've always been looking for and never found until now.
When you make a $120 gift to WJCT, you'll receive an HD radio so you can tune in to Relax. Call 904-353-9528 or go online to wjct.org/relax for more information.
Welcome back. This weekend, Under the Bridge, the Riverside Arts Market will feature an extra special something, the River Ruckus and the Celebrity River Jump, with some of your favorite local personalities jumping into the water. Here with a preview, Shannon Blankenship with the St. John's River Keeper, and our own Carrie Speckman, Communications Director at RAM, the Riverside Arts Market. You're on.
Am I on?
You're always on.
Really? You should never have told me that.
Let's start with you, Shannon Blankenship. The River Ruckus is coming up this weekend, and you've roped some celebrities, persuaded them to jump into the river.
Yeah, so River Ruckus is one of our most exciting events that we host all year, and it's a great collaboration with the Riverside Arts Market. There's already so many people that come to the Riverside Arts Market each week, and so having this sort of added benefit of all those recreational aspects of the St. John's River at the market is just sort of a double whammy of a really fun day.
Yeah, so Carrie Speckman, one of the many hats you wears, Communications Director at the Riverside Arts Market.
I'll be talking about the celebrities because...
Who are the celebs on the list?
Can we have Shannon do her part and then I'll talk about...
Oh, yes.
I'm not trying to tell you how to run your show or anything.
No, you are, and that's okay because maybe. I'm used to that. That's fine. Or at least this segment of it.
A lot of people are intimidated by you, but I, for one, am not.
I don't want you to be. That would be really bad. That would be very bad. So tell us who's jumping into the river.
So
did I just not say that I would talk about that?
So Carrie is going to talk about the who. Carrie has been able to use her fame and her sort of celebrity status to get us a really good...
Don't you mean celebrity stalker status?
Well, you know, I didn't use that word. You did. But the most exciting thing about River Ruckus, or the best part of it, is that we're able to really highlight this issue of recreation on the St. John's and the issues with recreation on the St. John's. You know, the St. John's River has some major water quality issues that we talk about all the time, that we've been talking about really for decades. Mm-hmm. And so having the celebrity jump allows us to really ask these important questions about what do we need to know about the St. John's in order to make it healthier and vibrant, and what do we really need to be doing to elevate these conversations to really try and remove some of these warning signs on our tributaries and talk about the algae bloom and talk about, you know, failing septic tanks so that we can elevate all of these things to a point where, you know, where it becomes a priority in our city. So having celebrity jump, having kayak flotilla, having fishing lessons, all of this promotes recreation on the St. John's. We're going to have, for the first time this year, stand-up paddleboard yoga. We're going to have mock dragon boat races to promote the Dragon Boat Festival. Jim Alabiso is doing his Up the River Swim, so swimmers are literally going to be coming into the Riverside Arts Market, followed by a kayak flotilla. We're going to have, as we always do, stand-up paddleboard lessons, free boat trips all day with Freedom Boat Club, marine science education boat trips with Jacksonville University's Marine Science Research Institute, and for people looking to learn about kayak fishing or fishing on the St. John's River, we have local charter fisherman Rory Gregg that's going to be there talking to people about fishing in the main stem of the St. John's, where it's safe, where to do it, how to do it, and really promote this idea of recreation on the St. John's, how important it is, and how we need to make sure that our river is safe enough to do these things.
And with all of that said, you are championing this river, Carrie, by getting local celebrities to jump into it in front of a lot of people.
Yes, local celebrities such as?
Such as?
Curtis Dvorak.
Oh, very nice.
I'll be very curious to see what he does. Katie Jeffries of First Coast News. Mm-hmm. Eden Kendall of Gator Country. Vic Mick, as I like to call him, Vic Micolucci
from Channel 4.
John Phillips.
Oh, the attorney, know the lawyer,
the
John
famed
Phillips.
Attorney Matt Pittman from TimesUnionJacksonville.com. Of course, Lisa Reinman, the
St. John's Riverkeeper.
And City Councilman Jim Love.
Did you put this list together?
I certainly did.
A perfectly curated roster.
I did ask, and don't think I didn't ask the mayor.
Oh, really?
Molly. I asked her. And
the mayor,
like,
first lady, yes, of Jacksonville.
I asked her, and then I'm like, well, if you can't, maybe Boyd, the one that likes to blow bubbles and stuff. He was so excited, but they're going to be out of town.
Too bad. But it's your chance to come out and meet some of your favorite local celebrities at the River Ruckus Saturday. It's kicking off at 10 a.m. at the Riverside Arts Market.
The jump is at 1.
The jump is at 1.
And I'm the MC.
Well, of course you are. You're the MC of everything. I mean, who else, right?
You.
Shannon Blankenship of the Riverkeeper, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And meanwhile, whether it's RAM or something else on your calendar, or finally this hour, lots to do across the First Coast this weekend. Here is she is every Thursday. Wait a minute, you're already here. So Carrie Spegman is here to tell us a little more about this weekend's events. Yes, here today. There's
Thank
your
you.
Applause.
Yes.
And we do still need to get a new theme song for you, which my long list of things to do.
Clearly, we don't, because no one is responding.
Okay. Speaking of music, your favorite band, according to your social media feed, Loverboy.
Well, my favorite band of all time is Tears for Fears.
Tears for Fears.
My
okay.
favorite band, like as a child, you know,
Loverboy.
Not a child. Oh my God, I'm so excited! I could tinkle in my skirt right now.
They are coming
to
St. Augustine Amphitheater.
With the Romantics and Rick Springfield.
Rick Springfield, hot again, thanks to
his... What song did he pick?
This is Sean Birch's pick, which
well done.
You know
Turn
it's
me
good.
Loose. It's Turn Me Loose. Well, I just requested not working for the weekend.
This is a better cut. And Rick Springfield, back in the spotlight with movie he's in with Meryl Streep.
He's actually the headliner. But I saw him a couple years ago, and I haven't seen Loverboy in probably 15 years. And if anybody has any connections, I would love to have a meet and greet. And I will be posting on Facebook some essays I wrote about Loverboy.
You wrote essays
in
about
high school
Loverboy?
And creative writing. Any chance I had to write, like, here's an expository. I don't even know what that is, but I would write about Loverboy. Sean is so embarrassed for me. I don't care. I love Loverboy. I don't care. I'm not embarrassed.
It's Sunday night at the St. Augustine.
Do it
Amphitheater.
My way.
Sing it, sister.
I gotta do it my way.
All right. That's Sunday night. And really, there's nothing else to say after that impromptu performance. We should just wrap it up
no.
right now.
No, we cannot do that.
We're short on time.
Okay.
What else is happening?
Pechakucha tonight?
Pechachka.
No, it's Pechakucha.
I was told it's Pechachka.
Well, it's also Pechakucha. No, it's Pechakucha.
Okay.
And it means a little conversation in Japanese. This is the title, Social Media Masters. It will be people speaking who are kind of social media mavens, such as myself.
Yes.
John Phillips, Ben America. We will be, it's at 6:00 at Florida Mining.
That's tonight.
That is tonight. Mosh After Dark is tonight. You can go on top of the roof, assuming it's not raining. Paint, bring your own wine.
Also tonight, taping of Tonight with Jim Alabiso, right here at WJCT.
Right here.
Jim Alabiso, the next late night host star.
First late night.
Coming straight out of Jacksonville.
Jacksonville.
Not straight out of Compton. Straight out of Jacksonville.
You are so hip,
Jim
Melissa.
Alabiso is the hottest new host in town. You can come to this
Who
taping.
Who also gets his hair cut by the same Pat Cole of the Total Hair Experience, where Melissa and I also go.
Now, come on out tonight to WJCT and be in this studio audience. It's free. They're going to start the taping at 5:30 p.m.
I think 5:30 is just when to get there.
Okay. Maybe start around 6. But be in the audience and support Jim and Jax TV and WJCT.
Yes. Okay. Jaguars are playing. Armada is playing.
There's the the Jacksonville Tattoo Convention, which is in St. Augustine, is Friday through Sunday. There is a Prince party, which is appropriate since you're wearing purple. He won't be there. He'll be there in spirit.
He'll be there in spirit.
It's a 1904 music hall. They have like
celebrating the music of Prince, who became the artist formerly known as Prince, who is now back to being Prince.
Who became that symbol.
Yeah.
That guy.
He put out some new music recently. Did you see that?
I did not know that.
Okay, so that's happening. We talked about River Ruckus. And last but not least, Saturday night, singer-songwriter Steve Forbert.
Right. And a lot of people may not know. He's kind of that alt country. I'm sure Sean knows. Oh, Sean shook his head. That's not a good sign. He did Romeo's Tune is like his thing. And he did, it was covered by Keith Urban. So that should make him famous. He's at the Mudville Music Room, which is actually a very underrated
venue
place to see music.
It really is. Yeah. So
it is.
Let's give them their props. And Carrie Speckman, always
Saturday,
great to see you. Come on out and see her at the River Ruckus and the Ram this
or
Saturday.
Or Pachacucha tonight.
It's Pachacucha.
No, it's not. It's Pachacucha.
I'm going to look it up.
Go on John Phillips' page, who's also speaking, and he has the whole thing. It's Japanese. So what you really need to find is a Japanese person to read the characters.
That is my first order
of business. It's not Pachacucha, Pachacucha, Pachacucha. It's Pachacucha. That's what I'm sticking with.
Okay. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Sean Birch is the show producer. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Our daily podcast is now on iTunes and Stitcher. And next on Diane Rehm, abortion opponents seek details on women who get abortions and the doctors who perform them. Several states have moved to cut Planned Parenthood funding or even for clinics without abortion services. A look at new tactics in that movement is next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. See you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.